Russian and Soviet monuments are being removed in Ukraine.
The city of Dnipro has pulled down a bust of 19th century Russian writer Alexander Pushkin.
Plus, Vladimir Putin and Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko got together on Monday. Just what did they talk about?
Russia is kind of moving their forces on the territory of Belarus to the south part of Belarus, so basically closer to Ukrainian borders.
And later in the program, a look at how war is affecting the Ukrainian healthcare system. Today is Tuesday, December 20th. From the Voice of America in Washington, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish. As we learned in yesterday's show, Moscow launched a large drone attack early on Monday morning against Kyiv. Later in the day, Russian President Vladimir Putin held talks with his counterpart and ally, Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko, in Minsk. Many observers feared that Putin will pressure his ex-Soviet ally to go beyond the support he's already given and join a new offensive on Ukraine. Angela Johnston of Reuters has more.
As Russian President Vladimir Putin touched down in Belarus on Monday, Ukrainian fears rose that he would pressure ally and counterpart Alexander Lukashenko to open a new front in the war. It's Putin's first visit to the country since 2019. Still, in a joint news conference, the pair hardly mentioned the war at all. Both Lukashenko and Putin also dismissed fears from Belarus's largely silenced political opposition about a creeping Russian absorption of its much smaller neighbor. Russia is not interested in absorbing anyone, Putin said. It just doesn't make any sense. Lukashenko has repeatedly said his country will not be drawn into the war. Although Russian forces used Belarus as a launch pad for an attack on Kyiv in February, and there has been Russian and Belarusian military activity there for months. Russian troops that moved to Belarus in October will conduct battalion tactical exercises, Russia's Interfax news agency reported, citing the defense ministry. It was not immediately clear when they would start. U.S. State Department spokesperson Ned Price said the two leaders' track record spoke for itself.
Look, I think a statement like that has to be treated as the height of irony, coming from a leader who is seeking at the present moment, right now, to violently absorb his other peaceful next-door neighbor.
The meeting comes as Russia hit key energy infrastructure in and around Kyiv in a so-called kamikaze drone attack. Ukrainian officials said air defenses shot down 23 of 28 drones, most over the capital. No casualties have been reported from the strikes. Monday's attack marked the third Russian airstrike in less than a week and the latest in a series over the past few months, targeting Ukraine's power grid, causing sweeping blackouts during sub-zero temperatures. In his nightly address on Sunday, Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky said his country was ready for all possible scenarios with Russia and its ally Belarus. Putin calls the invasion a special military operation to denazify Ukraine. It's the biggest conflict in Europe since World War II. Cities have been reduced to ruins, tens of thousands have been killed, and millions driven from their homes in the 10-month-old conflict.
Reuters' Angela Johnston reporting. As the war rages on, evidence of past Russian achievements is vanishing from Ukrainian public places as wartime Ukraine is erasing Russia from its past. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
Russian memories are vanishing from Ukraine. Ukraine's accelerating efforts to erase Soviet and Russian influence from its public spaces by pulling down monuments and renaming hundreds of streets to honor its own artists, poets, soldiers, and independence leaders, even heroes who've fallen in this year's war. The change is happening not just in Kyiv, but in other parts of Ukraine. The city in Dnipro has pulled down a bust of 19th century Russian writer Alexander Pushkin, and a street in Kyiv, named for philosopher Friedrich Engels, will now honour a Ukrainian avant-garde poet. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
We examine the role of the war in Ukraine's healthcare system later in the show. Now, though, despite pressure from Western countries, India has remained steadfast in its partnership with Russia, refusing to condemn the war in Ukraine and not joining Western sanctions against Moscow. Anjana Pasricha reports from New Delhi that this has not broken its ties with the United States, as both countries are wary of China becoming more powerful in the region.
As the Ukraine conflict raged, India refused to pick sides between its Western partners and Russia. On a visit to Moscow last month, India's foreign minister said New Delhi will bolster economic ties with its Cold War ally.
For us, Russia has been a steady and time-tested partner. And as I said, any objective evaluation of our relationship over many decades would confirm that it has actually served both our countries very, very well.
New Delhi has not joined Western sanctions and has also increased its purchases of discounted Russian crude oil, coal and fertilizers. It has abstained from United Nations resolutions condemning Moscow over its aggression. Analysts say with India's military heavily dependent on tanks, fighter jets and other equipment of Russian origin, it could not afford to isolate Moscow. But the escalation in the Ukraine conflict, such as strikes by Russia on Ukraine's energy infrastructure, is causing concern in New Delhi. In September, Prime Minister Narendra Modi told Russian President Vladimir Putin on the sidelines of a regional summit that this is not an era of war. Significantly, an annual summit held regularly between the Russian and Indian leaders has not been scheduled this year. India's stand on Russia has, however, not strained ties with the United States, as some had feared. With an eye on China, both countries stepped up their strategic partnership this April. Indian and US armies held joint exercises close to India's border with China last month. Having good relations with both the West and Russia, analysts say in the coming months, India hopes to play a constructive role in any efforts to end the armed hostilities in Ukraine. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Time again to check in with Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. President Volodymyr Zelensky was in Bakhmut. Anna fills us in.
Yes, so the city of Bakhmut, as we already know, the city in the Donetsk region remains one of the hottest spots at the entire front line in these current days. And just in his latest evening speech yesterday, President Zelensky confirmed that Bakhmut is remaining the hottest spot at the entire front line, and that it is what we're talking about is more than 1,300 kilometers of active hostilities. Since May, Russian forces are trying to get into Bakhmut, but Ukrainian forces managed to not let them in. So, and this is basically all around the city, all this really extremely heavy battles happening. And just today at around noon, we found out that President Zelensky actually visited the city of Bakhmut. He was there today in the morning and he was meeting with the soldiers and he was giving awards to the soldiers who are currently fighting there. And what we also know that so Ukrainian soldiers asked President Zelensky, they gave him a Ukrainian flag and asked President Zelensky to give this to Ukrainian American partners who support and who provide all the needed equipment because, well, it helps a lot in there.
We've heard a lot about what Bakhmut is like now, the destruction, the devastation. What was it like before the invasion?
Well, I should say that the city of Bakhmut always had quite an important location because, so it's close to Kramatorsk, which is another important city, which was a very desirable target for Russian forces back in 2014 when this war started. And Bakhmut was is just located next to the city, and it's basically on the very edge of those occupied areas that Russian forces occupied back in 2014 and 15, and Ukrainian territory, which is under Ukrainian control, I mean. So, of course, it has a very strategic place, and also it is very close to the border with Luhansk region. So, basically, it's kind of a crossroad of current, you know, of current hostilities, and if we look in general, it has, for the moment, it has the same meaning as Izum had back a couple of months ago when part of Kharkiv region was also occupied by Russian forces. But if we look back before all this war, it was a little city in the Donetsk region, and I cannot say that it had, a specific meaning or specific historical importance. It was just nice little city in the Donetsk region. I mean, it was not that big. It was around 70,000 population.
We know that Vladimir Putin met with Alexander Lukashenko in Minsk on Monday. What's the reaction been in Kyiv?
Just a couple of hours ago, it was information from this monitoring group called Belaruski Hayun. They usually, provide information on the movements of Belarusian forces, and they just informed, again, we cannot verify this information or confirm it independently, but they just informed that Russia is kind of moving their forces on the territory of Belarus to the south part of Belarus, so basically closer to Ukrainian border. This is just what we get in, and again, we don't have confirmation from Ukrainian official sources and Ukrainian intelligence. What we know from the meeting that happened yesterday, we don't really have specific official reaction on that, but in general, the feelings in Ukraine that this meeting was about, Putin just came to Lukashenko to talk and to check probably on what Lukashenko can still do for Russia in this war, because we all also hear that there is this, tensions on the border. Belarusian forces are on ongoing trainings, and there is a risk of this, possible invasion from Belarus territory again, like it happened back in February. So I cannot say again that it was a specific, official reaction, but Ukrainian officials still say that invasion from territory of Belarus still possible, but for the moment they consider it as not too high.
That's our reporter in Kyiv, Anna Chernikova. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. The war in Ukraine has affected food prices all over the world, pushing more people to hunger. A closer look coming shortly. But now, amid drone strikes, blackouts, and bomb shelters, Monday was St. Nicholas Day in Ukraine. The AP's Ben Thomas reports.
Amid a broad battlefield stalemate, Russian forces continue to bombard Ukraine from the air as war-weary residents find a new kind of Christmas spirit. I'm Ben Thomas with the closer look. Sweeping broken glass and picking through wreckage to find something salvageable in the debris or evidence of the weapon used. It's been self-exploding drones of late, often striking in the night, many intercepted by Ukrainian air defenses, but not all. But Monday was St. Nicholas Day, the start of the Christmas holidays in Ukraine and in Kharkiv. A Christmas tree lighting in the central subway station where residents can shelter from the Russian air attacks. Mayor Ihor Terekhov says you can't steal a holiday from children, so the festivities have been moved underground for safety. In the capital, Kyiv, amid the hum of generators, the Christmas tree is outside, lit in blue and yellow and topped with Ukraine's golden trident.
We have a lot of discussion about it, but definitely decide to celebrate New Year and Christmas, because it's for children, it's very important.
Mayor Vitaly Klitschko.
Also, we want to show the Russians we have will to win.
And at the capital's train station, Ukrainian Railways Chief Oleksandr Kamishin oversees the loading of the St. Nicholas train.
The train will bring over 30,000 New Year presents to our kids in the eastern and southern areas.
He echoes the mayor's sentiment.
Because we want our kids to feel the Christmas despite the Russian attacks.
I'm Ben Thomas.
The World Health Organization is warning that increasing Russian attacks on Ukraine's electricity grid and other critical infrastructure are putting the lives of healthcare professionals and thousands of patients at risk. Lisa Schlein has the story from Geneva.
Ukraine's health system is resilient, but WHO officials say hospitals and clinics cannot function when they lack electricity and water. Speaking from the capital, Kyiv, the WHO representative in Ukraine, Yano Habich, says Russia has attacked more than 700 healthcare facilities since it invaded Ukraine on February 24th. These assaults on healthcare, he says, have adversely affected facilities, supplies, and transport, injuring and killing healthcare workers and patients.
This marks a clear violation of international law. Health should never be a target. Amid ongoing attacks, WHO continues to deliver life-saving medical supplies throughout the country. And these supplies and interventions have saved lives. And WHO is here, as many others, to deliver care and to save lives as we go further.
Habich says the WHO, in coordination with Ukraine's health ministry and partners, has delivered medicines, trauma kits, power generators, and other supplies, mainly to frontline and newly recaptured areas. He says up to 9 million people have been reached, adding many more will need help to survive Ukraine's harsh winter. He warns freezing temperatures will increase the risk of respiratory, infectious, and cardiovascular diseases. He says ongoing attacks on energy and heating infrastructure will decrease the availability of healthcare services. He adds people are likely to endanger themselves as they struggle to stay warm and heat their homes.
As people resort to alternative sources of heating for their homes, such as coal and wood, and using diesel fuel generators or electric heaters, we see the risk of carbon monoxide poisoning will increase, as well the other risks.
Besides its serious physical impact, he says the war is also creating enormous mental distress. He says WHO estimates up to 10 million people are at risk of some form of mental disorder. Habich says WHO has a team of more than 200 personnel delivering supplies and healthcare services to tens of thousands of people in 8 priority areas. He says there are no plans to halt these life-saving operations during the holiday season. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Even before the war in Ukraine started, there were several things making food more expensive and harder to find, making it increasingly difficult for hungry and impoverished people the world over. Then Russia invaded Ukraine. The United Nations says high food prices in 2022 led to a crisis of affordability that has pushed millions more people into hunger. VOA's UN correspondent Margaret Bashir talks to experts about the situation and what to expect in 2023.
349 million. That's the number of people on the planet who don't know where they'll get their next meal, according to the UN's World Food Program. And the number is growing. The agency says by the end of this year, it will have fed a record 150 million of the most vulnerable. Experts say a combination of factors is driving food insecurity. The COVID-19 pandemic, conflicts, climate shocks, including historic floods and droughts, energy prices, and Russia's February 24th invasion of Ukraine. Arif Hussein is the chief economist for the World Food Program.
But even before the war in Ukraine, the food prices were at a 10-year high earlier this year. Fuel was at a 7-year high. We were already talking about inflation. So when this war came on Ukraine, it magnified everything.
In part because Ukraine and Russia are breadbaskets for dozens of countries. Will Martin is a senior research fellow at the Washington-based International Food Policy Research Institute.
Ukraine and Russia are important players in production, world wheat production. Their market shares are about 4% and 8%. Much bigger share in world exports. So if you don't have freely flowing grain from the Black Sea Basin, then you're going to have very big problems outside.
The war also drove energy prices up on fears of supply disruptions and sanctions on Russia's oil and gas exports. Fertilizer prices are up 250% from 2019, according to the UN. Half of global food production relies on fertilizer, and small farmers who cannot afford enough have seen their harvests decline. Again, Arif Hussein, the WFP's chief economist.
Right now, with all that is happening, we are looking at essentially a shortfall of about 66 million tons of staple foods because of shortage of or unaffordability of fertilizer. I'm talking about crops like wheat, corn, rice. Now, that 66 million tons of food, that is enough to feed 3.6 billion people for 1 month.
Looking ahead to 2023, food security experts are watching fertilizer availability and weather. Maximo Torero is the chief economist for the UN Food and Agriculture Organization.
In the case of wheat and corn, it will depend a lot on what happens with the weather. Argentina, for example, right now has some issues of weather which could be affecting the harvest, and that's something that we are observing very closely. The same could be happening in the U.S.
The uninterrupted flow of grain and fertilizer from Russia and Ukraine under the Black Sea Grain Deal will remain critical to global food security. Rice is the primary staple food for half the planet, and experts are closely watching production. FAO's Maximo Torero.
In case of rice, we are already observing a reduction in the supply because of lower planting. But rice, luckily, we have a lot of stocks because the previous years were pretty good.
Economists say the strong U.S. dollar is increasing monetary pressures on dozens of poorer countries who are import dependent and need debt relief. WFP's Hussein.
If you're a poor country, if you're highly indebted, if you happen to import your food, your fuel, or your fertilizer, you are in trouble.
Amid the rise in food insecurity, the UN recently named its first famine prevention and response coordinator to lead its system-wide response. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Join us online at voanews.com and on social media. Just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.